And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And a special thank you to DJ Gregory, founder of Walking for Kids Foundation. This guy is so inspirational. And, of course, his public relations chairman was in studio, too, Amy Froebel. And they were awesome. So, everyone, hopefully you wrote down the website and, make some contributions to them. They're helping all sorts of people. And, of course, if it is, the second Tuesday, it must be Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. And Bob is in the house. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Dave.
Wow, I sound like a what do you call it, an announcer for a sporting event.
Yeah, that's just the cold of plugging up my head.
So, yeah, oh, there we go.
It doesn't last forever. Otherwise, I'd have a better job of, being a sports announcer.
So here we are. Financial planning is always so critical. I mean, look at the economy. Look at all the things people are going through. Planning, focus, clarity, and confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. We always talk about that. People need to keep looking at that. We've been talking the last couple months of, goals and resolutions and how easy it is for things to fall through the cracks now that January's gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Can you believe it? It's already almost mid-February. What happened?
I don't know.
But where did the time go?
No idea, but yes, it's going fast. And it always does, and that's a really good point. Not even just looking at the month. Think about where the last year went. Think about when we were worried about, the banks were going to fail because they couldn't read 0-0.
Oh, yeah.
In many ways, that seems like forever ago.
What was that? That computer?
The year 2000, yeah. They didn't think computers could read a 0-0, right?
I can even read a 0-0.
Remember the big the big concern about that.
And all the money spent with consultants doing something for computer systems so it could read. They said always the Macintosh was okay, though. They thought it was the other stuff.
Yeah, and companies that just came and went so quickly because of that. So
very strange.
But yeah, time goes by very quickly.
Oh, wow, and I can imagine now. I mean, we'll be talking about New Year's resolutions financially.
We'll just replay the show. From last year.
Yeah, well, that was a good show. So you have an excellent show today. You're going to talk about suitability and fiduciary standards. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the SEC, being in the business, obviously we see it a little bit more than other people do, but the SEC is really struggling right now with, does the average investor understand the difference of what the role is of their financial, put any term. I mean, I could probably name off at least five, but the different terms you've probably seen of broker, financial planner, financial advisor, investment advisor, wealth manager. I mean, there's so many titles out there. It's really hard for the general public to make any kind of knowledgeable decision of who's held to what standard. And the SEC is really pushing right now, SEC being the Securities and Exchange Commission, really pushing to try to equalize that field for the average investor so they understand what they're getting when they ask for help.
That's important, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it is. And, we talk all the time about my bias to be in fee only. And by doing that, I am held to a fiduciary responsibility, which is the highest standard of law. As many people say, that's, the gold standard. And basically, the key piece there is it is the client's best interest. We never put anybody's interest other than the client's in front of us.
And that's how it should be.
It should be. But what's interesting is that most brokers and other people that hold themselves whatever title, a lot of times fall under what's called a suitability regulation.
Yeah, so, describe what the difference is.
Yeah, suitability, it doesn't have to be the best interest for that person. It just has to be, quote, suitable. Right?
Well, how does that work? Not the best interest. Who defined that, the SEC?
What will happen from a suitability standpoint is, let's say a broker, and I'm not going to pick on brokers necessarily, I'm just using that word, and we'll talk about, there's good and bad in every industry. But if a client came in, what they need to do is say, okay, he or she is certain age, has certain means, has certain time frame, has certain risk tolerance, and they can put them into an investment vehicle, whether it's a stock, bond, mutual fund, that is, quote, suitable. Okay, but what we usually see in the business is, just because it's suitable doesn't mean it's the best. So A great example is in-house products. So we see mutual funds that are brought out by people that are that they're working for, right? Is that the best product for them, or is it, it's suitable, it's okay, it's pretty good, and I get paid a lot better commission on this product? That's where the suitability falls.
So who falls under those standards? Is it everyone or just?
Almost everybody. When you get into the brokerage world, that's pretty much what their standard is.
Is suitability.
So, who's under,
so who has a fiduciary?
Fiduciary, typically a financial planner. That's one of the things as we talk through this hour, we'll probably talk about, you know, what should you be looking for in an advisor if you're going to look for an advisor. And their NAPFA, the National Association of Personal Financial Analysts, or advisors actually, has a fiduciary oath. And I'm going to offer to the listeners out there, if they email either me or you, because I'll give you a copy of that, take this with you. And, you know, if you have any questions of whether the person that's giving you investment advice falls under a fiduciary, have them sign it.
Well, that's a good idea.
And if they won't sign it, ask them why. And What I really like to talk about on this subject is just know where the person falls. As you know, you and I always often talk about is that there is no right answer. But I think education and understanding, is there a conflict of interest? Is the advice that I'm receiving absolutely in my best interest, or is there a potential conflict of interest?
Well, it would seem like it's built in, the conflict, on a suitability situation. Am I right?
Yeah, it to me, if there's any chance, if the broker or advisor or whatever you want to call them has the potential or is being paid by anybody other than the end client, there has to be at least a potential conflict of interest, right?
Now, why two standards, though? I'm trying to think. Now, the brokerage versus financial planners, I'm just wondering why. First of all, let me make a comment. Why two standards is the question, but isn't that unfair competition to put someone at either a lower standard or someone at a higher standard? It would seem like it's unfair competition. As you, as a financial planner, you got the higher standard, which is good, but maybe I'm not saying go down to their standard. I'm saying raise everyone up to your standard.
And that's exactly what the SEC is questioning, because as we went through, you know, certain periods of time, you know, the late 90s was a great example. What was suitable and what was in your best interest, as we saw the tech wreck, as they call it. And recently, anytime we go into a negative market, you know, that we saw in 2008, it's always a question of what advice should have been given. And I think that's, I think your point is well taken, because I think that's where the SEC is going. I think they're hearing from clients, being the individual investor, shouldn't that person have done this?
Yeah.
And the SEC has come back and say, well, they're not held to that standard. Was the investment suitable for you? Was it okay to buy IBM stock? You're 50 years old. You're, you know, whatever the, you know, whatever suitability standard, right. It's just very loose.
It doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't. But as you know, I mean, you're basically in the field. Most of the people that you know that do this business, that's what they do, right? They sell commission products.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. That is, and there's, I think, an inherent conflict there. Now, I know CPAs are allowed to these days, if you disclose it to the client, I believe, team up with a financial planner. I think they may have to take some tests. But I always thought, even though it might be legal, I always thought there was an inherent conflict there. And I decided, no, I'm never going to do that. I'm just going to be a CPA. I don't want the financial planning part of it, because I think there's, as a CPA, there could be an inherent conflict, even though it's legal.
Right. And I it's legal, and I certainly can see both sides of that. But aren't you, as a CPA, in your traditional role, not going into the planner role, aren't you held to the fiduciary?
No question about it, and very, very high standards. And it's a similar to what you do, and I really compliment you for having a fee-only.
Fee-only.
And that sounds like Shrek, fee-only. Who was that?
Fiona.
Fiona. All right, so you'll have a Fiona. No, you don't want a Fiona, but you're a fee-only, and I'm fee-only too. You know, we both give advice and without any commissions, without anything that would taint our advice. It's what's best for the client, period. That's
right.
It. No, nothing else. No questions asked other than that. And I think the suitability thing, or if there's a commission involved, I think human nature, even though people, you know, basically are honest, you know, at least at an unconscious level, they might say, well, you know, maybe this product will generate a little bit more commission, or even worse, I don't know if it's worse, but someone that, you know, let's say they didn't have a very good month or 6 months, and they go, God, I'm desperate, you know, and maybe they need something, and it could influence them. It could. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it will, but why even have that possibility exist?
Right.
That's what my thing is.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that that probably happens the last day of the commission month. And you see, I can't think of an perfect example, but somebody comes in and says, well, choice A is really the better choice. Choice B probably isn't horrible, and it'll probably get the job done, and I get paid X amount on choice A and X plus whatever the amount is on choice B. Is there the possibility? And that's the key piece. I'm not saying that all commission, and I think there's certain clients that maybe would fit a commissioned broker better. That's one of the key things that we talk about. You know, the show is called Breakthrough Thinking, so that people just understand, think, and become knowledgeable and break through the typical patterns of what has happened before.
No doubt about it. And, you know, I'm thinking what happens, there's outside pressures placed on brokers or whatever, and including maybe quotas from managers, perhaps. I've never worked in a financial or a brokerage firm. Maybe spouses. Well, maybe. Right. Yes, definitely spouses. Okay, that's my marriage commentary. And other obligations, Kurt's getting a kick out of that. obligations, I mean, these are all financial pressures that sometimes can alter behaviors.
Right.
And from an NLP standpoint, that is possible. And all the best intentions in the world doesn't negate the fact that it can alter behaviors.
It can. And that's the reason, one of the reasons the SEC brought it up, and I think it's one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about it, is just understand it. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. Obviously, I have my bias, but if you can sit there and ask whoever you're receiving your investment advice from, do you receive payment from anybody other than me? And if they if they say yes, say who? It goes back to the CPA example. If, you know, you might feel comfortable with a planner, but how do you know what if client A would be better suited with planner A, but you get a kickback to send them over to planner B?
Well, not me. He's
right,
doing a hypothetical.
Right, exactly.
No, you know, kickbacks for me.
If a CPA, yeah, yeah. Let's rephrase that, yes, because you openly admit you don't get involved in this. But
what if
a CPA did that? You know,
it's a problem. It's against the code of ethics as a CPA, and unless they have that whatever. And I didn't even read up on it. I said I don't want any part of it, even though it's legal. And I think you can share commissions, because I as a CPA, I was getting all sorts of literature from some of the big brokerage houses saying, right, hey, you can do that now, as long as you disclose it to the client and so on. And I said, no, I'm never going to do that, even though it's allowed. I said, no, I think it's an inherent conflict, and right, I don't want any part of it.
And that's where I think that's hopefully the listeners take away from the show, that it's not, there's no perfect answer. Just understand that that is out there. And if you can understand
Very
that there's
important.
A possibility that that's happening, you can ask the right questions and find out what's most important for you.
And that's the education part. And, you know, in fact, we're going to have the Board of Accountancy and the Arizona Society of CPAs on the bottom line May 3rd. And that's going to be great, because the Board of Accountancy is a governing body,
right,
talking about that. The State Society of CPAs is the trade organization, I guess you could call it, the association for CPAs.
Right.
And we're going to probably go over some of these topics, and it could be eye-opening. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion on suitability versus fiduciary with Bob Berger. And this is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger, and we'll be right back.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And this is the segment called Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. And I've never said this, but I'm going to call you Bobby. Hey, Bobby.
I think you did last time.
Did I? Really?
I think you did.
Or could I call you Robert?
Call me whatever you want.
Remember, not whatever I want. Remember the commercial, you can call me Ray or you can call me Chad. You're too young for that, are you? You remember that one?
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
Oh, Kurt remembers. I don't know how he remembers either. But anyway, we're talking about fiduciary versus suitability. Very eye-opening. Let's talk real quickly before we get into the Forbes article. Fee Only, not Fiona from Shrek. I love that movie, by the way. Did you?
It's a very good movie.
Fee Only versus fee-based. Your fee only. Describe what is the difference. I think education is important to make great decisions on who to hire.
Yeah, those two are so often confused. And as we were talking off air, even when we first met, you used to say, and I'd have to correct you all the time, no, fee only.
I would go back and forth.
So I'm going to read this right off of the NAPFA site. So that's the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA.org. Fee only compensation. Basically, this minimizes the conflict of interest. And a fee-only advisor only charges for his or her advice and ongoing management. No other financial reward is provided by any other institution, which means they do not receive commissions on the actions they take on the client's behalf. Compensation is based on an hourly rate, a percentage of assets managed, a flat fee, or a retainer. In essence, fee-only financial advisors sell only one thing, their knowledge, right? And isn't that what most professionals do? So you go to your CPA. Wouldn't it be interesting, we'll use the word interesting, if you got paid more if they got more money back?
See, that would be so horrible. And I know the Board of Accountancy, AICPA in the States, they don't like that because it really starts to deteriorate the credibility of the industry if that was the case.
Right. Absolutely.
You don't want that.
Think about your scenario. All you do is tell them to claim the lowest amount of exemptions, so that way they'd almost be guaranteed to get money back, right?
See, yeah, you're right. So that I'm glad they're very strict.
Yeah.
And so that's fee only.
That's fee only. So fee-based, which are very similar in name, but I think very different when you look at it. It's often confused with fee only, but fee-based advisors charge clients a fee for the advice delivered, but they also receive payments from the products that they sell.
Oh.
Okay, so in some cases, commissions are credited towards the fee, given the appearance of an overall lower-priced option, but any outside compensation lessens the advisor's ability to keep the client's best interest first and forefront. That's directly from the site. So let's break that down. Most people, when they hear fee-based, they think that their best interest is always in front. And it may be, even with a commission. Don't get me wrong. There's plenty of brokers, advisors that are, and most, I hope, are ethical, do the right thing. But there is that potential for conflict, and that's, I think, the key piece, is the potential for conflict, and knowing, is the person that's giving me advice getting paid by the product that he's recommending?
Let's ask this question behind the scenes. Let's open it up a little bit. I'm not sure the answer, but do you think certain companies, certain products, and their representatives wine and dine financial planners to say, pick me, pick me?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, they do?
Oh, absolutely. Whoa. It's called soft dollars in many cases, so it can be research or, dinners, all the different things. Absolutely. Phoenix Open was here this weekend, obviously, and you see some of the bigger name wirehouses, what they're typically called brokerage, and you'll see them give tickets to their broker, you know, the people that are selling their products. Absolutely. That happens a lot.
So that in itself creates, you know, at least outwardly, a problem, I think, from a conflict standpoint.
A potential problem. Again, we go back to, let's say mutual fund A is very similar to mutual fund B, but mutual fund A gives me tickets to the Phoenix Open every year.
Yeah.
Right? And the other one doesn't.
There's a little bit of a swaying there. So it is wining and dining.
Absolutely.
Wow. So even that industry, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time. And I mentioned soft dollars. The other thing they can do is pay for research and things like that, or marketing. So there's all kinds of ways that they can get paid differently.
That is amazing. Now, what's your opinion of that? I think I know, but tell the audience, that is that something you would like to see abolished?
Yeah, I don't know if it needs to be abolished. I certainly don't participate, because I do believe fully that the client is the only person that should pay me. Obviously, I have a bias, but I think that's where the SEC is trying to go with this, too, is that they're trying to take any conflict out. And that's where this whole big discussion is coming from. And there's a big fight. The brokers of the world want to keep the way it is, right? They don't want to have to be held to the fiduciary responsibility. They want a suitability responsibility.
Interesting.
But, yeah, I think the less potential conflict you can take that you have, or the more potential conflict you can get taken out, the better the advice should be.
So what would be an example of a brokerage house? I don't know if you want to mention names.
Yeah, well, we'll use names that aren't around anymore, like Merrill Lynch.
So they were a brokerage house.
They're a brokerage house.
But don't you have to be a financial planner to be in the brokerage house, or no?
No, that's a good question. And that's something that I think the general public doesn't understand. They don't have to be a financial planner. Typically what they have to have is what's called a Series 7 or Series 6. And what these are there used to be NASDAQ, now it's FINRA, licenses. So if you have a license, what does that imply? You have a license to sell something, right? Versus a certification, which means you went through some knowledge base and you have some expertise in a field.
So describe the difference between you and someone in a brokerage firm that has, a Series 6, you said?
Series 6 is typically mutual insurance. Series 7 is usually stock. So if you have a license, again, license to sell, that's typically what they have. What you see more in the planner world is certified financial planner, certified, all kinds of designations out there. Obviously, I have the certified divorce financial analyst, chartered financial analyst. Things like that imply that you did some study, did some work study, took a test, and received a certification, rather than took a test and got a license to sell something.
Now, is the certification through a state agency, or is it in some other?
It's federal.
All
of those are federal, yeah.
Wow, that is interesting. That makes quite a big difference, I would think.
Yeah, it is, and that's where, when we started out, we talked about the different titles that people have out there, and probably to the general public, that's one thing I would say is don't worry about the title, and we're going to talk about that, I think, next is, if you decide you do need an advisor, you're going to use an advisor, or if you're using an advisor, what questions should you be looking at, and I think they get caught up in the titles. Banks are notorious for, everybody's a vice president or a senior vice, you walk in the door and you're a vice president, right? So everybody's got a title there. Don't get too hung up on the title. Look at what their expertise is. that certification. What is that? And what does that certification mean? There's lots of letters that you can get really easily, as, you know, in all different fields. There's certifications that are harder to get than others. And what do they really, you know, imply that you know?
So you could be certified and work in a brokerage firm.
Yes.
Does that happen
yes.
a lot?
Yes, you can, and that's absolutely true. And there are plenty of examples that are like that. And I would hope that, especially at that level, that they're doing the planning because they understand the planning process, obviously, because they went through the schooling. But they still have that potential.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And that's the key piece. I don't want to go to say everybody that's in that world is bad, because it's not. It's just that you have that potential, and as an individual investor, I think it's important to know that potential is there, and understand it and ask the right questions.
So which standard do you go under? If you're a certified financial planner at a brokerage house, is it the suitability standards or the fiduciary standards?
Yeah, I think you're held under the suitability standards from your employer, but I think maybe you hold yourself up to the fiduciary standard.
So, but by law, then, it's really the lower standard.
I believe so.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
Well, that's quite a loophole, potentially, right?
Right. And that's an interesting word, loophole, because they called what's called was the Merrill Rule, ironically.
Oh.
But what they said was, the broker said, well, we don't really give planning. Planning is incidental to our sales process.
Really?
So, therefore, we shouldn't be held to the fiduciary standard because we're not really doing planning. We're salespeople. So when they want,
yeah.
so when they want to be, when they don't want to be held to standard, then they're salespeople. And when they want to be, you know,
it yeah. goes, but I it bet their well sales fine. Pitch is, oh, we're good planners.
Right, right.
That could be a problem. I bet if it got down to it.
Yeah, and that's exactly
how
why
you
this,
hold yourself out.
And that's exactly where this SEC debate is coming. That's why this is happening. And I think it's important for the general public just to know it, not know the details, but it's coming. And at some point, this may fix itself. But in the meantime, it's up to the individual investor to ask these questions.
Very, very important. And that, I just bet the general public has no clue about this stuff.
Right. They don't. Well, even think about, you know, our conversations.
Yeah.
You know, you still even admit that I'm still not sure about the fee-based versus fee-only. And I don't.
It's interesting.
And if you don't, what do you think the general public does?
Oh, there's no doubt. And I think it's just great education to understand that, because in your selection process, anytime you select someone or do anything, make decisions, how do you make those decisions? Well, hopefully you got good information.
It goes back to education. Educate yourself as much as you can. Ask questions. I think that's one of the best things, advice you can give people is ask questions, be comfortable, figure out if you can trust somebody. Trust goes a long way. Right?
Well, that's huge. I mean, trust, and I guess that's a question. How do you know to trust someone?
Yeah, I think you go back to asking the questions, understanding what you're supposed to ask. Like I said, anybody that wants the copy of the fiduciary oath that NAPFA puts out, I'd be happy to send it to them and see if they at least hold up to that standard. And at least that's a good starting point.
It is a good starting point. And when we come back from our break, we will look at the Forbes article. We'll get Bob's contact information to get that article or that, what do you call it?
The fiduciary oath.
The fiduciary oath. That is awesome. And we'll be right back.
This is Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement offering compromise, or not currently collectible status. Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. We're talking about fiduciary versus suitability. Very interesting topic. Something that people have to know before choosing a financial advisor. That's very important. We talked a little bit about the Forbes article. Did you want to give your contact information out, or how do you want to handle that?
Yeah, Dave and I have talked about this article, and it's named Suitability Where Brokers Fail. And I'd be happy to send a copy out to anybody that would be interested in reading. I think it does a good summation of what we're talking about from obviously an outside source rather than us. So if you would like a copy of that and or the fiduciary oath from NAPFA, my email is bob@moneyaz.com, or you can call me directly at 602-235-0336, and I'd be happy to send either one or both of them out to you. And I think it's so important for that fiduciary oath, again, just to have that in hand and see if your advisor would sign it. And if they won't, why? And again, just because they won't sign it doesn't make them a bad person or a bad advisor. It just gives you that piece to say, why won't he sign that? What conflict am I dealing with that they won't admit to?
That is interesting. I'd have people sign it.
Right? You mentioned having the same level playing field.
Yeah.
Actually, I think by us being able to sign that without hesitation, it actually puts us probably at a higher playing field. But most people don't know about it.
And from an NLP standpoint, you want to watch their nonverbal reaction. If they freeze and go, let me think about that. That's not a good sign. Either they know about it, and they should know about it, and they should be more than happy to sign it immediately.
Right. And they should know what it is.
Yeah. And if they don't, that'd be scary in itself. So the Forbes article, if you want that, 602-235-0336 to call you?
Give me a call or shoot me an email or log in to the Breakthrough Thinking radio site and find my information there.
Yeah, just log in, www.breakradioshow.com. That's B as in boy, R-E-A-K, breakradioshow.com. You could leave me an email also on this if you want. And we can get you out any information you want. And also, you're going to enjoy some blogs that Bob's going to do pretty coming up in the future, right?
Yep. Yeah, I write blogs for other places, so I should be adding them to the Break Radio Show. So
in fact, we got some good blogs going on with the show right now. So anyway, let's see. Let's get into, we talked about the standards, the suitability, fiduciary. Do you want to get into what you need to ask financial planner, or how to make a decision, I guess, is the key.
Yeah, I think there's two questions there. I think one of them is, do you need a financial planner? And anybody that's listened to the show in the past has known that I've always said people can do this themselves. There's more than enough information. It's similar to doing taxes. There's plenty of things that you can do yourself, but why would you hire an expert as if you just can't do it yourself for whatever reason? And some of the things that I consider when I'm questioning whether people should use an advisor is, do you know what your long-term financial goals are? It amazes me when I sit with a prospective client and say, what do you want for financially in the future? And I have to pull information from them because they've never even thought of it.
They really take that show seriously that used to be on long ago as One Day at a Time.
Right.
Remember that? Who was that? Kurt will know the famous actress. And the young daughter? Oh, Bonnie Franklin. No one heard you, so I had to remember. Bonnie Franklin and some, like, Cicerelli or something. Valerie Bertinelli. I was close, right? Bob, do you ever watch that show?
I do remember that show.
Now, there are good times to do one, you know, good reasons to do One Day at a Time.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a very good technique in NLP. It's chunking down. It's getting you focused. However, you can't do long-term planning when you do one day at a time. If you're only planning one day at a time,
right? We talked about off the air. What is the biggest enemy for reaching your financial goals? And it's one word: procrastination.
Absolutely, procrastination. And you know, and that's a loaded word too, because behind procrastination might be fear.
Mm-hmm.
It might be lack of knowledge. That's where you come in with education. Mm-hmm. It might be something that they attach meaning to, that it's some painful event. It's whatever that painful event is, or what you associate pain to, because what you associate pleasure to, usually people do it.
Right. It's
what's up with that?
It's the immediate gratification versus long-term benefit.
And, yeah.
And it is hard. I openly admit that it's hard to pass up on. You know, think about a diet.
Yeah, that's right. A good example.
Right.
That pizza, right?
Right, the pizza.
You're a personal trainer.
I used to be, yeah.
Yeah, so you know how to discipline yourself when it comes to probably exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're in great shape, right, Kurt? Look, he's in great shape.
So, but think about this. I heard a trainer say this in the past. You know, we all pretty much know, it goes back to having enough information. There's enough information out there. If you eat a cheeseburger every meal, you're probably at a higher risk of having a heart attack than if you eat
lettuce.
Lettuce, exactly, or maybe a more balanced diet. Now imagine, so you give up the immediate gratification of the taste of a cheeseburger right now versus the lettuce, but because you can't see the long-term effect of having a heart attack, 5 years, 10 years,
yeah,
20 years down the road. Imagine if you ate a cheeseburger and you immediately had a heart attack.
That would prevent cheeseburgers. McDonald's,
right?
I suspect, would probably go out of business.
Right. And it goes same thing for financial pieces. If you could absolutely see somehow with a crystal ball into your future that you'd be struggling through retirement, it'd be a lot easier to put off some of today for tomorrow. But we can't. And that's a struggle that goes back to that one day at a time.
You know, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think, you know, I bet people, this is a little more psychological, but people get discouraged. They look at the economy. They go, wow, it's going to take a long time. I think people just sort of get down and they just sort of go with the flow. But our guest, the first half hour, really showed how you can cut through obstacles, DJ Gregory. I mean, here's someone's born, cerebral palsy and overcomes what people say, doctor said he'd never walk. And here he walked on every major tournament in 2008, over 1,000 miles on every hole that every tournament had. It is possible. It's possible to train people to take their financial picture more seriously and with education. Bob, is that correct?
Yeah, and there's two points that I take from that comment that you made. One of his comments that I heard when I was on my way in was that so many people don't even take advantage of being dealt a good hand. And I'm paraphrasing,
yeah,
obviously.
Well,
but
exactly.
But he said, look at what he made for himself with what most people from the outside would look at as a bad hand, and look at what so many people do when dealt with a good hand.
Some of the comments, I actually wrote it down. I have it in my notes here. Don't take no for an answer. I mean, and that's in a good way. I mean, you're looking at self-improvement. Do not take no for an answer. In other words, what's non-negotiable? Well, to lower your standards. Mm-hmm. That's non-negotiable. Looking always at the glass of half full, he said that. Something I thought was really interesting, goal-oriented. He loves goals, not for the goal itself, but for the motivation aspect and to be able to measure it. I think this is very, very important. And he says something else, love life. I mean, that means he has joy within him from the beginning. He's not relying on life and circumstances to give him joyful feelings. He just starts with joy. I mean, isn't that the way to go?
Yeah, and you think about emotions. How many people make investments based on emotions? You mentioned when the market was down, everybody sort of bailed out. When it was the perfect time to get in, we've just had 2 years of double-digit positive returns.
So, oh, nice.
So that, you know, that's one of the things that I would ask people if they're questioning whether to use an advisor. What did you do over the last 3 years? Okay, when things got ugly, 2008, early 2009, what did you do? Did you stay the course? Did you have a plan? Because now we're at levels pre-Lehman failing, right? So if you kept adding money to that process, a lot of cases a lot of clients that I have, we actually upped their equity exposure, not by a lot because we don't make big wild bets, but you know, let's say they're 60% equity, maybe went to 70% equity in early 2009, knowing that valuations were much lower than they had been historically, and it paid off, okay? Benefit of hindsight, it paid off. So that would be one of the questions I would ask somebody if they're questioning whether they should use an advisor. What did you do during good times, and what did you do during bad times? Because we see the other example, too, late 90s. Everybody buys in on the tech stocks right at the wrong time, and I'm also sort of fearful right now that I wonder if the public's starting to all jump in at the wrong time, and we're going to see maybe a little bit of a correction, but we'll see how that plays out.
And what does Warren Buffett say?
Warren Buffett says, I'm going to paraphrase, but it's very similar, buy when everybody's scared and sell when everybody's fat, dumb, and happy is basically what
he's a smart guy, isn't he? He knows his stuff. Yeah. It's really his values, though. It's not just, I mean, sure, he's he's brilliant. Right. I mean, really brilliant. However, I think really the substance to him is his values. I mean, here's a guy that I believe lives in the same house for 35 years. He's not extravagant. He doesn't do things for money. He does things for long-term equity. I mean, those are a good set of values.
And think about what he did, because he takes a lot of heat, or took a lot of heat in the late 90s when he wouldn't jump into techs. But he said, I don't understand techs. I've asked, I've looked, I don't understand it. And if I don't understand it, I'm not going to buy it.
So not on emotion.
Not on emotion. And it goes back to sort of where we started this talk was understand, ask questions, understand what you're getting into, because in the end, only you can be accountable for the decision that you made. It's really easy to blame somebody else. Let's say you chose a broker that did a bad job. Let's say you invested in Bernie Madoff.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Right. So the extreme, right?
Yeah.
So let's say it's easy to blame him, but shouldn't you be looking in the mirror going, I didn't ask the right questions? And that's another one that's in the news right now in our field. Huge lawsuit going against J.P. Morgan, I think it is. They're saying that they knew that Madoff was a Ponzi scheme and didn't share the information. Of course, J.P. Morgan saying, well, we questioned it, but we didn't know it for sure. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it goes back to understand, and that's what Warren Buffett did, is he understands what he's buying.
And guess what? One of the most clever commercials of all time is Geico.
Geico.
Who owns Geico?
Yeah, Warren Buffett owns
his company.
Right.
I mean, they are clever. Right. Even a caveman can understand that.
Right.
And the little Geico.
And the gecko, yeah.
Or the gecko.
Right.
It's so cute, right?
Right.
Which was your favorite gecko commercial or Geico? Or what's he call him? The gecko.
He calls him the gecko.
I like the one where he's standing up and this lady comes out really mad and she goes, how could you, Stanley? And, you know, and she goes, you're not Stanley.
And don't they have the new one now that how would you not know about this unless you were living under a rock and the
fourth
guy comes out?
Yeah, that
was in the Super Bowl, right?
That was a pretty good one. Yeah. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Bob Berger. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger, and we'll be right back.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do. The truck's got a flat tire. The water hose has a leak. They can't decide what to wear. And everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process. They follow it. They're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. We call him Bobby around here. Okay, there was a famous song after you. What was that song with Bobby? What do you, you know, Martin Luther King, and remember that? Kurt's thinking, I'm going to stump Kurt. Okay, good. Yeah, he knows the year. He says it was in 69. So let's talk a little bit more about the best commercials of the Super Bowl. I'm just kidding. Let's talk about how do you select, what are some of the decision points, what are some of the questions to ask, and how do a financial advisor, and how do you pick someone?
Yeah, there's so many out there, and even when we mention trust, it's real easy to trust somebody that does a good sales job, right? So I think it's good to have an arsenal of questions. Right. So,
oh, absolutely.
So that way you'll know what you look for. So some of the things I look at are the credentials, the affiliations, and the experience. Okay. So credentials that you typically see, certified financial planner, which we talked about, sometimes a chartered financial analyst who's more of a stock picker, certified
public accountant.
There you go. CPAs. Obviously some of them are involved. And as we talked about at some length, you know, should they be in the financial planning arena or not? But certainly they have a credential and they understand the tax piece. So you need to look at other. And there's lots of others. Affiliations, NAPFA, I keep talking about because they are really on the forefront of fee-only financial planning. So if you know.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's the organization that really pushes fee-only financial planning. By being affiliated with NAPFA, you're going to automatically be held to that fiduciary oath. That's part of the ethics piece. There's Financial Planning Association, the Certified Financial Analyst, Chartered Financial Analyst Institute, plenty of insurance designations out there. We talked a little bit about licenses. Licenses a lot from FINRA are really the ability to sell a product. If you have a Series 7, you can sell stock, but you can't sell insurance. So now you have to go get another license. So it'd be good to know what licenses you have. And one of the things I bring up to people there is if you have a license and you tell me you're not going to sell me product, why do you have the license?
That's a good point.
Right? It's a good question. And there's probably a lot of good answers, but I just want that question answered. A broker-dealer arrangement. So who are you, what's called clearing through? So goes back to that conflict of interest. If you're working, we can pick on Merrill because they're no longer around. You know, if you're affiliated with Merrill Lynch, there's a good possibility you're going to try to sell me Merrill Lynch products.
Oh, there you go. So that's right.
Are there any kickbacks? You know, we talked about the CPA scenario. Market niches, I think, is an important one. If you are dealing with a lot of physicians, you probably understand what physicians the struggles and the different complexities that physicians deal with. Same thing with, I deal primarily with the middle income person. Okay, so I'm not dealing with the ultra high net worth. So I understand that what most people in middle income America are trying to reach their retirement goals, probably questioning how they're going to pay for kids' college if that's applicable. You know, they're really struggling to get there or questioning the path there. And, you know, that's very different than somebody that has ultra high net worth. They probably have a very different mindset. So are you going to be the smallest fish in their pond, or are you going to be the biggest fish in their
pond? Good point.
Right? I think that's a good one. I use this phrase a lot. Were you sold or did you buy?
That's a good one.
Right?
Because, and how do people tell the difference?
Yeah, I use the analogy of going in to buy a car. Right? Everybody's done that. You know, do you walk out of the dealership going, I bought a new car, or do you walk out going, I was sold a car? You know, and in the investment world, I hear that a lot, especially from prospective clients come in, I was sold this product. And that's the word they use. They don't say, I bought this product. They say, I was sold this annuity. I was sold this insurance product. I was sold whatever. I think there's a huge difference. And if you think through that, I think it'll click to what's the difference there. Another question I ask is, how is the plan individual to you? Okay, so when you go into an advisor, and or whatever word you want to use, how can you know that that plan was built specifically for you? One thing I really question is, if you go meet an advisor and they're ready to do your investments for you after the first meeting, they may be too eager to be selling you something rather than really getting to know you and finding out what your goals are.
Or a cookie cutter.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a pre-planned package thing. I'm sure they have that. You're right.
Right. So you can think of the person that no matter what, they're going to be sold some kind of insurance product, typically an annuity, and that's going to be the one size fits all no matter what. They'll listen to you talk for an hour and, oh, yeah, you know what you need? You need an annuity, and we can set you up with that. And, you know, it's one of the things I hear from clients sort of, we've talked an awful lot. When are we going to move forward? But I think it's important to understand what the client really needs before you start to implement the plan. I think it's important to understand, as you put the plan together, a good question to ask an advisor is, what other choices were available? Because that's one of the things.
That's a great question.
Right? Because I don't think there's a best solution for everybody. But if you ask an advisor, you should say, okay, I trust you. I understand what you were saying. What other choices did you consider? And why did you not choose them over this one?
And even better, I'll add this in. What if you interviewed three financial planners and you say, what choices did you even consider? And they say, there wasn't any other choices. But from the other two planners, you already got a couple other choices. And then you say, well, what about this one?
Right.
And if they don't know about it, doesn't sound good, does it?
Right. No, that's a very good point. And that goes back to that cookie cutter scenario, that the choices should be for that individual. It shouldn't have. And don't get me wrong, advisors are going to have a bias towards one. I believe in passive investing, so I'm not looking for a lot of active management. I believe you take the market returns, diversify, keep costs low. So a lot of my stuff will look similar, but it's also going to be based on the spending habits of the client, how close they are to retirement, how much risk they can take, things like that. But, and the other scenario is, do you choose an active fund or a passive fund? Passive typically means something similar to an index. And why? Why did you choose an active fund in this piece and you chose a passive fund here? And they should be able to answer that question.
You know, it's a good point. And also, customers, are they price shopping? Are they just looking at the lowest price versus the highest sophistication, the highest skill, and the best integrity? You see that? I always tell people, interview other people, because guess what? I have a lot of confidence as a CPA that very few are going to know what I know, and they don't have the skill level using NLP that I have. So I go, yeah, go ahead. But if they're price shopping, then that's your criteria, and they're going to look from that portal. Now, how about with the financial planning? A lot of price shoppers there?
Yeah, there are price shoppers, and that's one of the things. That's a good question. First of all, I don't think you want the client that's the price shopper. You're not the Walmart, because you have more expertise than, you know, the Walmart, right? So if that person buys purely on price, you probably don't want them as a client anyhow. And I forgot where I was going with that. But
you were thinking of the commercial, the Doritos commercial, Super Bowl. No, the doggy one. That was my favorite.
Yeah, going back to the pricing, I think that's important to think of. Ask the advisor, how do you work with clients? Does it always have to be this? What if I am pretty confident in what I'm doing? And what if the numbers show that I'm on track? I have clients that come in. I have clients that have no money under management with me but are struggling just to get moving forward. And they pay me a minimum per year, and I sit down with them quarterly to say, okay, here's where we are. We've got this amount of debt. We've got this amount of assets. How can we get you moving forward? And they gladly pay quarterly just to have that unbiased opinion to say, here's what you need to be doing. Have you, you know, sort of the coach rather than the advisor.
I just wrote that down. Did you read that?
No, I didn't.
I just wrote that. You sound like a coach. That in itself is valuable, to have someone coaching, discipline, and then they get the bonus, which is your knowledge. Oh, right. My God. I mean, that is incredible.
So then the other scenario would be hourly or project, or because there's other people that walk in the door and I run the numbers. We do a plan and they're on target. They need to make some adjustments here or there, but they don't need to make a wholesale, and they're doing fine. They're putting money. What I tell them, I send them away and say, come back in a year or call me if you have questions in between. There's no reason to put them under some assets under management umbrella. They're doing fine.
You really do what's good for the client.
Right. Well, I think
a
everybody
breath of
should.
Fresh air. That's what we're going to call Bob. A breath of fresh air.
Well, don't you do that in the tax world, right? Yeah. You charge people for the work that they need to get done. It's not fair to charge somebody that has an extremely complicated, 14 businesses and whatever versus the person that just has, two corporate jobs. Doing a tax return is very different.
In fact, often I'll tell people, you could probably get it done at a lower cost somewhere else, and maybe that's in your best interest, especially if it's not a hard tax return and you're okay. So, and that's good too to do that because it's not about the fee. It's just about helping who you need to help, and other people don't need that sophistication.
Right. And goodwill goes a long way.
Yeah. It really does. Right. Yeah. Right. I think it does. But education is critical to have even people evaluate who is a good, whether it's financial planner, attorney, a CPA, because a lot of people don't know. It's their gut instinct, like, this person's really nice. He's going to take me to the Phoenix Open or something.
Right. And then so it looks like we're going to wrap up. I see Kurt putting signs up there. The last thing I would say, to sum up the conversation, if you're going to ask one thing from an advisor what are the potential or real conflicts of interest?
Nice, good question. Say that again.
What are the potential or real conflicts of interest of me working with you?
And if they say none, have them replay this show at www.breakradioshow.com. Listen to this whole hour that we've talked about suitability and fiduciary responsibilities.
And if you question whether that person's telling the truth, have them sign that fiduciary oath.
Wow, this is good education. Huh? And guess what? We have a special treat for the listeners because you're going to stay on till 4. Barbara Hagerty, Mind Your Own Business, had another previous engagement, so we're going to continue our discussion on what? Financial issues and divorce?
I think we're going to, move it over to divorce a little bit. I think we could look of what you should be looking at for divorce.
Huge. Yeah. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Bob Berger, and we'll see everyone in about 2 minutes.
Reidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. We were having a senior moment or something?
Yeah, and, senior moment, technical difficulty. I don't know, Dave was talking.
I was talking. I go, wait, where's Waldo? I can't hear me. And, of course, it didn't say on the air yet. So, anyway, we had a lot of fun doing that. So, very important. This will be on the website, so www.breakradioshow.com if you want to hear a replay of the show. Very important before you make decisions with anything, and especially financial planners.
Yeah, I think any decision you make in life, having more information is always good. And one of the things I would say, just ask questions. Until you get the answers that you need, the more questions and the more answers you have, the better decision you're going to make.
No doubt about it. And now we're going to spend, maybe the next 25 minutes or so on financial aspects of divorce. And boy, I'll tell you, divorce is just, it's still a popular thing.
Yeah. Everybody wants to get in, right?
Yeah. It's like divorce, sadly to say. Yeah. I mean, the huge percentages of divorce, I don't know exactly what it was. I did read something like 67% in Arizona, all marriages end up in divorce. There is a, they do say, what did they say about divorce? That's right. 100% of divorce is caused by marriages. So I don't know. Okay. I didn't get a drum roll on that. I thought it was funny. Okay. Anyway, so Bob, what's up with that? You're a certified, how do you say it?
Divorce financial analyst.
That is phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting area, a little bit different than the financial planning world that I usually deal in. But when Barbara couldn't make, had prior commitments, I thought this would be a good time to talk about this, because it's an interesting leap from what we just talked about of, making decisions for your financial planner. I think so few people really consider the choices and the questions they should be asking when they go through divorce. And I'm even going to go a little bit out of the comfort zone of even the financial and talk about some of the other areas that people really need, they really should consider before they go through a divorce. Or maybe if you're in that spot where you're thinking that you may get a divorce, start getting the questions answered. So what I do in the financial world, so the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst designation, I help people, and I only work with couples. There are people that can be hired by an attorney, things like that. I'll only work with couples to try to help them figure out the financial piece as they're going through divorce. And you think of the different components of divorce when you're going through it. There's the legal, there's the emotional, there's the financial, and potentially, if there's kids involved, there's the parental.
That's right. Well, you're right. That's, and some big items there too.
Right. And think about what most people address. When somebody comes to you and says, I'm going to get divorced, where's the first place they go?
I think the first place they go is financial.
I think they go to the lawyers first.
Well, no, not the first place they go professionally. The first thing they're thinking of is, oh, how can I afford this?
That, good point. Okay.
Yeah, and then they'll say, okay, the legal thing. But I don't know. My experience with clients, they're really looking at the financial. I think the emotional is a close second, perhaps. But then they're wondering, because the financial leads to the legal or not.
Right.
Because they go, oh, my gosh, how am I going to afford this? Maybe I should do it myself.
That's an interesting, the way you answered that question, I guess maybe that was the way I phrased it, that was very interesting to hear that, because I think that's true. I think the emotional and financial, and potentially parenting, you know, that has a big effect on leading up to the divorce. But once they say, okay, I'm going to do
do? You're right. Then it's the legal issues.
Right.
Because they don't know. They're all worried about, okay, what do I do? How do I afford it? But somehow they got to figure out a way, and some maybe do it themselves, some maybe don't.
Right.
But it's not easy, though.
No, it's not easy. And it just like we talked about from financial planning or from tax, you know, understanding your choices and understanding the risks of doing it. The risk of doing it yourself is huge. I mean, it's just like doing tax or financial planning. Doing it yourself, you just don't know what you don't know.
That's the third level of thinking.
Right.
That's in my blog, actually, on the website. You're going to have to read that one. That's a good one. Third level of thinking. But no, I agree. And if you don't know what you don't know, that's almost like, wow, that's almost like driving on the freeway the wrong way blindfolded.
Right.
How successful will one be?
Right. And I understand people, you know, they probably driving on the way home, I'll probably see a couple signs, you know, do your own divorce, $399 or whatever the case may be. And that sounds really good.
Where the paralegals do that?
Yeah, I think some of these, you know, divorce store or whatever.
Oh, the divorce store.
Yeah, some of the, you know, you see these signs.
I'll
take two divorces to go on the drive through. And don't get me wrong, there's certain people that can do it themselves. If you're equal, okay, in all the components, so you understand the legal complexity. You understand financial equally, and I'm going to argue that there's no kids involved. Okay? Because when there's kids, because that's really
it's tough.
That should be the key piece. So the way I prefer people divorce is some form of collaborative. Okay, so
that's right.
So in a full team model, what you have is a child specialist. Okay, so they help understand the voice of the children, and that's my as you know, I've got a 4-year-old daughter. So if I were ever going to go through a divorce, she would be the primary, and she should be, the primary focus of the divorce.
But tell your wife now, honey, I'm not really, this is just an example.
Exactly.
Because she's on line one. We have a surprise for
you. Uh-oh. but I think the kid should come first, and that's where the collaborative process puts it. Because you can imagine examples where somebody says, I'll take half of the visitation just so they don't have to pay as much child support.
I bet that happens a lot.
I bet you that happens a lot.
And there's the financial piece again.
Right, right.
First and foremost on people's mind.
Right. And then so you put the parenting based on the values of the kids and the parents, and then you discuss the financial. And those two pieces, for me, are the longest lasting. Right. If you make bad financial decisions through the divorce, it's going to last for a long time.
Yeah.
If your parents for life, whether you like it or not, you know, you've got weddings, you've got grandchildren, you're a family of some structure for the rest of your life.
So you might as well forgive and let live and try to make the best out of the situation. A lot of people are bitter many years after the divorce you know, I'm just thinking, you know, when you're bitter, who's the one getting the raw end of the deal? The ones holding on to the resentment. Isn't that right?
That's
absolutely. Why can't you just sort of let it go and get on?
Right.
So people don't.
They don't. And, you know, I hear stories because I talk to the lawyers and people that have gone through divorces and, you know, the extreme scenarios of somebody gets married and dad sits in aisle one and mom sits in aisle two with her boyfriend or new husband, and everybody sits behind them, right? Because nobody wants to deal with those two. But that's reality for a lot of people, I think. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, as you go through a divorce, obviously my bias is that you work together. One of the quotes I use whenever I'm teaching classes on this is, it was your marriage, it should be your divorce.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You should be making the decisions. The court shouldn't be making the decisions for you. You should be making the decisions.
And you can do that if you collaborate on it. But if you're forced to, you know, if you're not agreeing, that's why there is a court. Mm-hmm. They'll make the decision. Not many winners when it comes to that. I think, you know, nothing against attorneys. They, you know, they'll make some money on that. Mm-hmm. And that's their profession. And so you can't fault them. However, I agree with you. If you can really keep it at a level where you can agree, maybe to disagree, mm-hmm. but keep it out of court.
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point on the lawyers. if you walk into, if okay, again, just an example, in case because my wife's on line one. If you're going to get a divorce, and you walked into a lawyer, and said, "I want to keep the house," that's what you're hiring him for, right? You say, "I absolutely, positively want to keep the house." Is it his or her job to say you can't afford to keep the house?
It's not.
Right?
It's right. You're absolutely right, and I guess they do that.
And yeah, so they say, okay, you hired me because if to be successful, you're going to hire me. I will get you the house, and you get through the divorce, and that person that wanted the house, if they kept the house, don't they consider that a success?
Absolutely. No, it is funny. There's a lot of funny stories about situations, and you just got to be careful. So if you are getting divorced, picking an attorney is very important too, because I've seen situations where the couples that are about to split up already agree on stuff, and the attorneys say, no, you can't do that because it's not fair. And sometimes, not always, sometimes it's about winning. Mm-hmm. The attorneys want to win at any cost, but it's really at your cost. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people, attorneys, fight over holidays when the two clients said, no, we're okay with that. And they go, no, you got to do it that way. And it prolongs it. So I guess the bottom line is take control over your divorce. Is that the theme here?
I think, yeah, that for me, that is exactly the theme. Take, you know, the scenario, the phrase that I used previously, and I'll repeat it, is it was your marriage, it should be your divorce. And a story recently from a couple that I was working with, the husband told me that they were dealing with attorneys as well, and then they came to me to do the financials. But the wife wanted to keep the house, and he didn't. And what the lawyer told him was, no, you can't say that you don't want the house, because then we don't have a bargaining chip.
Oh, it's all negotiation.
Right? But you're right. There are, and that's another good point of knowing who you're hiring. What are their specialties? If you know you're going to go into an ugly court battle, you want a shark or whatever you want to call them. You know, you want somebody that's going to go in and fight.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to work on it together, maybe a good lawyer that can mediate or collaborative.
Very good point.
You know what the lawyer brings to the table. Not everybody wants to go fight in court. And if you bring somebody into court that doesn't know how to fight.
Problem.
Exactly.
That could be a problem. And So some of the things we're talking about, take control of your own divorce. A lot of people are intimidated by that, but it's a good way to go. And also, I would say take emotions out of any decisions you make. And that might be hard because there might be resentment. Maybe someone, you know, went out on the other spouse or something, or there's something that happened. And it might be hard, but we talked about, you know, if you're too emotional on decisions, you might be missing some very important information.
And because I work as a neutral in the divorce process, so I'm not hired by either one, I'm hired by both. An interesting story in a recent case was the wife turned to me and goes, "How come you can say that? And I understand it." And the husband wasn't saying anything drastically different, but the walls were up. She wasn't going to hear anything that he had to say because there was a lack of trust.
Yeah.
And there was a bias. And of course, he has a bias to say one way or the other. Of, you know, we were talking about splitting something that was not 50-50 because he had a higher income and he'd be able to recover. And that's another thing I see with couples is that 50-50 isn't always the right answer. And it rarely is, actually.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion on divorce and finances, a big topic out here in Arizona, actually nationwide. And we'll be right back.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602 602-
235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. I should say a special edition of Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. Generally, this is Mind Your Own Business starring Barbara Haggerty. She had a prior commitment. So we are pinch hitting, talking about finances and divorce. People are, let me ask you this, Bob, are people staying together longer because of the economy when maybe they wanted a divorce, but now finances, which may have caused a divorce, also keeps them in the same household?
In some ways, yes, but I think even more importantly right now is that if you're going through a divorce, there's so fewer tools to use when you're going, when you're splitting up assets. So let's think 5 years ago, you had a house that was worth something. You had money in the bank. You could split all that up. What I'm seeing now is they walk in with a house that's underwater.
And they don't want the house.
And they don't want the house. Half of them don't want the house. How am I compensated for the house being underwater?
You know, that's a good point.
Right? So if I'm going to take negative equity of X dollars, well, I don't want to give, you know, I want to be reimbursed for that. That's an interesting way to think of that too. So
does that, are you saying that a lot of that?
Yeah, because that's most people that walk in. When I teach classes, I still have the slide in there about the cap gain exclusion for sale, and everybody just laughs, right? Yeah. 250 for an individual and 500 for,
right.
I still leave it in there because at some point that'll become applicable again. But
yeah,
everybody just sort of laughs. But that's an interesting point because I also hear people say, "I'm not going to get," and it's usually driven by the house, right? And they say, we can't get divorced now because there's no way we're selling this house in this market. But I also go back to, first of all, my comment is, it's never financially a good time to divorce. That's number one.
Yeah, that's true.
And then secondly, if you're both going to go live somewhere, right? Most, I assume one of you isn't picking up a box and going living, so you're probably going to have two homes.
They need a household.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to buy two houses lower now. So what's the other alternative? You wait and suffer through until the house comes up to where you want, but then the two houses that you were going to buy come up too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's a tough one.
I think I've seen so many articles on that, and maybe I'm missing the point there, but somewhere I don't see from a financial standpoint. I understand from an emotional standpoint. I think it's totally driven by emotions there. But from a financial standpoint, the house is worth what the house is worth today.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee what it's going to be worth tomorrow,
yeah.
next year, 5 years from now. There are no guarantees.
How about this? Have you seen a scenario where because everyone or a lot of people are underwater with a house, maybe credit cards, other debt, so one says, I'm going to file bankruptcy, and it almost forces the other one perhaps to do that. I'm not even sure how the courts look at that. I think you split it. And you split it, but if you file bankruptcy, then maybe some of that community property debt shoots your way, and it almost forces the other person's hand in a way, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, and it's one of the follow-ups I need to do with the. Maybe we should bring in a bankruptcy attorney sometime
yeah,
to do that.
That'd be awesome.
That would be
yeah.
a good one, because I get that question. I don't get that question as much as I get that threat.
Oh, yeah, I'm
the
sure
the person
that.
says, well, I'll just claim, you know, I'm not taking that debt. I'll just claim bankruptcy. But
yeah.
I think I'm in the same boat as you. I'm looking, this is a community property state. You get half. I'm not sure how, if you claim bankruptcy individually, you get rid of the community property debt. I mean, I could see it if the debt was in your name only and you filed bankruptcy,
yeah.
you can limit that. But I'm not sure. And that would be interesting. Maybe that's something we should bring somebody in on the show that's a bankruptcy attorney to help us explain that.
Actually, that's a great idea. We should do that. Yeah, I'm thinking the way you're thinking. We're not attorneys, so don't quote us on this.
Right.
Check with your attorney
right.
or you know, whoever it is that helps you. But you're right. I think it's one in a community property state. If it's community debt, I believe it's joint and several liability, which means perhaps one person can get off the hook. Off the debt, and that half goes to the person that didn't file. We'll have to clarify that.
Yeah, I have to clarify that. And in a class that I just taught a couple weeks ago at Fresh Start, one of the participants was going to get a divorce, and they have to wait until they filed bankruptcy a couple months ago. They have to wait till the bankruptcy is cleared before they'll let them file divorce. Which
oh.
is interesting. They won't let them file yet, so they want that legal.
Really?
That's what she's saying. Again, check with a bankruptcy attorney, but that's what she was saying. She said she can't file until the bankruptcy is at some level.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
a lot of legal issues there.
Lot of legal issues there. And you know, again, we'll disclaim we're not attorneys,
yeah.
and you need to go get legal advice. But it is an interesting piece right now, and
huge piece for a couple more years at least, because yeah. there's going to be a lot more bankruptcy, sadly to say, I believe, and that causes pressure, which may lead to relationships having some issues,
mm-hmm.
and they've always had issues, relationships, it seems like, and when there's financial pressure, it just magnifies it. So what is the solution?
What is the solution? I guess one of the things I always say is understand the financial picture as you're going through it. Goes back to the education. And what I'm making a jump here is saying that financial caused part of the divorce. Okay?
Yeah.
And it does for a lot of people.
I think it does too.
So if you have one person, I guess the answer to the question there is, what's a solution? Is that both of you take an active role in the financial piece while
yeah.
you're going through marriage?
Yeah.
Because then you can both take an active financial piece while you're going out of marriage.
Yeah.
Right? But I think with one person, and we see this on an almost regular basis, one person is so much more educated in the financial piece than the other. And that creates a lot of problems because a couple things. The person that isn't educated, first of all, will never know if they're getting a good deal or not. So
yeah.
it generally drags out the process anyhow because everybody operates out of fear. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
The people that I'm dealing with, some people operate out of greed, but most of those people are already talking to an attorney. They're not working together as a couple. So what it's interesting, I see both people almost always working out of fear. The fear on the person that has the lower income is they're afraid they won't be able to, they're going to be living in the box scenario,
yeah.
you know, won't have enough money, and they're fearful they're not getting enough money. On the other side, the other person is saying, if I give this amount of money, I'm going to be the one living in a box. I'm the one being broke.
So two fears head on head.
Head on head. So what our job is to say, to show the numbers, to say, here is what both of you will look like if you do what you agree upon.
And that's the value of what you do.
Yeah. You know, and one of the key pieces is being unbiased.
Is that how that's got to be easy for you, I suspect, to be neutral, right?
It's easy and hard because then part of the time you have to be coached sometimes. Because, you know, and that's one of the things I talk about for other financial planners, and I'm going to do a talk in front of the financial planning group later this month.
Oh, nice.
But a lot of people will say, why can't I do this myself? And I'm like, if you're the planner, I don't think you want to be in the middle of the dirty laundry of a divorce. And that's another piece that I say by being neutral. I tell them right up front, I will take neither one of you as a financial planning client after the divorce. So everybody's worries can go down because talked about conflict of interest, the fiduciary versus suitability scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't it be a huge conflict of interest? Let's say the husband and I are getting along really well, right? Would it be in my best interest to give him or recommend to him all the investable assets?
Oh.
Right? Isn't that a huge conflict of interest?
That is huge.
Right? So that's why I only work with couples, and I only work as a neutral, and I always tell people I will not work with either side.
And that's valuable.
I think it's hugely valuable because then people understand that there is no, you know, perceived or real conflict there. And then they can both talk openly and hopefully get to the end of the issue.
Say, that's the way to go. I think it really is. And although, sadly to say, with emotions involved, people want to win or get back. Revenge is a motivation. Unfortunately, that never serves you well.
And I think what's interesting, the more cases I do, that's what I thought when I first got into the business of doing this. And I see less and less revenge. And maybe it's because, again, I'm working with couples. But I see less and less revenge and more fear.
Wow. And that wraps up another episode. Wow, that's a good one to end on. There's fear. Get rid of the fear. Your life will change. This is Dave Isaac, host of Breakthrough Thinking, alongside Bob Berger, reaching your financial goals with Bob Berger. Bob, thank you so much. Contact information?
Bob, email bob@moneyaz.com, and you can call me directly at 602-235-0336, or go to Break Radio Show and get my information there.
Well, that sounds good, and you'll be back on next month. Another exciting topic. Look for Bob on the website, www.breakradioshow.com. Look for all the blogs. We're going to have some really good information for people. See everyone Friday. Sports show. Bye-bye.